It was such an external way of being with religion, and it was such a guilt-based way of being, and it was such a controlled way of being, you know, that I feel sorry for the people who did have to come to religion in that way and didn't get to escape. And that doesn't mean that, you know, they don't get into heavenly states. They don't get to laugh and enjoy religion. But it makes it harder, as Ian's pointing out. You know, where you are makes it harder. If the environment isn't supporting you and loving you and laughing with you and feeding you and doing all the good things that you see our Lord does in the New Testament, you know? It always impressed me, you know, people coming after him and giving him a hard time. What are you doing out with all these tax collectors and prostitutes and drinking and all that? And he goes, well, this is where I'm meant to be. Where would you have me be, you know? And some of the sacredness I've seen, like in the big cathedrals, and this sort of, you go in there, and or even the Vatican, you know, it doesn't inspire me to love. You know, it doesn't even inspire me to a lot of wisdom.
Just awe.
What's that?
It's just awe.
Yeah, it's just sort of like, you know, what it is. And so let's have a look. And what I'll do is I don't mind making fun of myself now. And I check with my wife. I mean, look, if you're going to be a minister, you have to check with your wife. Do you know what I mean? So if you believe what you're reading in Swedenborg, I mean, I like too that when Julian ordained us, he ordained me and Jenny. And she became a rebess, she said so. But I just think there's so much in that, it's beautiful. And so I checked with my wife and I said, you know, some people are saying I'm a bit up myself. And she said, yes, you are. I went, okay, well, I know how. And she said, but on the surface you have this false humility. I said, do you know about that? That's just me. That is my secret, you know. And she said, but underneath that, you're actually very egotistical and you're thinking I'm more than everybody else. I said, do you know about that too? How did you find that? Women are very perceptive, I've found. After 30 years of couples therapy, I tell us, no, I'm not talking about that this afternoon. But then she said, but underneath that, no, there's a good, true humility in you. And she believes that. But of course, as we know, it's women's job to whip that into us. Otherwise, and I love it. Anyway, that's this afternoon's talk. I won't go on to that yet. But I love reading Conjugal Love. It's a really beautiful book around all that. And that, anyway, that's this afternoon. So I'm quite happy to, taking away, in fact, I hope adding to the sacredness, deconstruct myself. And I think that's what the actual message is here overall, but also in chapter 34. And it links to what we talked about last night. So what I want to start off with is, and along with that too, is I often joke with these guys, I don't know what possessed you to let me become a minister. Because I don't know that I'm not very good at it. I think I'm better at teaching therapy. But some things at work that helps me integrate the therapy and the religion in a way that I think's useful. And so that's a good thing. But like when we did classes with Ian, and I still think, David and I trained together. We ended up spending the whole week sharing a room like we're doing now, which is lovely. It was really a really space where we had this really wonderful routine of doing this. And I haven't done this for ages, where we would unpack a chapter of the Arcana, you know, together. And because before I'd become a minister, I had about 20 years, I had discovered Swedenborg through Gestalt therapy and Wilson van Dusen, who was a Gestalt therapist. And that really opened me into an influx of a whole wide range of religions, but particularly Swedenborg. And so, you know, for a long time, for a couple of decades, these guys would just bring me to camps and I'd do my little talk thing and then I'd go away. You know? And that was fun. But then I really kept getting the urge to become a minister, and off we went. But it in some ways was our way of doing it was something I had to readapt to because I hadn't been to church for a long time in that form, and I hadn't done these things, but these routines that we did still are in me, and I feel I love that I've been held in that and shaped by that. And when I go to working with the Arcana and trying to do what we do now, even though I might only do it once a year or something now, I remember some of the things other people have told me, like David Moffat always comes to mind, who when he would do it, he would say, I like to read, if I'm going to read the Bible chapter here, I like to read the ending of the chapter before and the beginning of the next chapter, because it tells me the flow and puts in context what I'm dealing with. And I really like that, you know. Now, I don't know how other people go at the Arcana or read it. That's part of what I want to explore as we do this, because it all fits into what the message is. I want to step into that in levels. Maybe I'll ask that to start with before I expose my shame. Maybe if you shame yourself a little bit, that might make me feel different. How do you approach the Arcana? What's the hard part to you when you start to read the Arcana? And what's the good part? How does it affect you?
I have to enter into a different framework of thinking.
Yeah.
That's what I have to do.
Anyone else want to say? And Ian, do you want to say maybe what that framework is? Can you say what it is for you, man?
Well, I was only saying yesterday that very early on, Brian, I learned that the writings are not there to be read as a novel. I used to think in my early days that I should be reading Heaven and Hell from Arcana Celestial Volume. People would say, oh, well, I've read Arcana Celestial, I'm now into the 11th volume. And I thought, well, goody for you, but I'm not, because I don't read the writings like that. I don't read them cover to cover. I'm going to tell you that. So that would be my shame. But it's not what I think is necessary. So I use the writings, but what I meant, Brian, was that I have to move, rather like what David says, I have to move into this, not a sacred mindset, but into a sense that I'm dealing with something, a treasure that is worth working away at and get.
Yeah.
Now, I don't read other literature in the same way. That's what I mean. I shift into that.
I hear that. Anyone else want to say?
That sums it up pretty well, I think.
You would say that?
Yes.
I hear that.
You read the parts of it when you need it.
You need it, that's right. So there's a relationship happening.
Yes.
It's even like last night, you come into contact. When you've been in withdrawal, you open your eyes and you feel, and there it is, and you go to it. Yeah, that makes sense. Rather than diligently going through.
Like if there's something in Kempton, or some Bible verse you're reading, you look in Kempton, and then you see what Swedenborg says about that particular verse.
Yeah.
And it might be anywhere.
Yeah.
Right? But you just want to read that particular subject up.
And get
what he thinks of that particular.
And get support from other people and what they've felt about it, and do it in a. Yes, I like that.
Picking the pattern.
Yeah. Get a sense. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense too. Patrick, yeah.
Yeah, I'm finding more often than not these days I'm feeling quite exasperated and quite frustrated. But it changes that if the way I feel when I'm reading a text can change in different states. And I think for me it's all about actually probably when I'm reading it, because I'm reading it as a bedtime story, that's not when you read it, but I just I just find it feels like it's shutting me.
You can feel it shutting down at times. But this is what I'm really interested in too. We don't often always talk about this, but the relationship. And see, that for me, that makes that as sacred as this too, because it's about that relationship. And we've got Sally and Glenn.
Margaret had something to say.
Oh yes. Okay. Margaret.
Thanks for noticing. I enjoy reading the Arcana. It's hard work at times. Sometimes it seems a bit dry, And then you come across good bits. And sometimes when I just pick it up, I find paragraphs that Ian's highlighted, so I immediately go to those because I know they're only the best ones to read. There's something
did
special
you know
there.
That? Did you know that?
We should print a copy of those.
Did you know it?
About you a little bit about it.
A little bit.
Right, my dad started highlighting his copies of the writings, yeah. And now they're by now he's 84 yeah. or whatever. It's nearly all highlighted.
Yeah. isn't that fantastically interesting about how we read and take it? That's yeah. lovely. What a lovely concept. Glenn, you've been hanging in for a while back.
Thanks for all the things, Steve. I think Swedenborg's own usage of his arcana is reflected in the way he pulls out passages of, well, Heavenly Doctrine or Heavenly City, as Wolfenden translates it, is all just passages pulled out from the arcana
yes.
and organized in different places without their context at all.
Yeah.
And so I think we're quite at liberty to do that.
Yeah.
I always feel quite at liberty when I'm reading to skip over large blocks of references to the Old and New Testament if I don't feel the pressing need to investigate those passages. And,
yes.
Bishop King, talking about reading at bedtime, Bishop Louis B. King liked to say that he uses the arcana as a sleeping aid at night, and then he soothes his conscience by reading them in the morning as well when he's alert, but quite effective. And just personally, my best experiences with reading the arcana have been in groups where the uh-huh. focus was on not so much what does this teach you, but what comes up for you in your own life as you're reading that.
Isn't that lovely? This is great to hear these stories.
I feel there's no way you could read it like a novel. You wouldn't absorb anything. I feel that if I'm looking for something, it's all right reading it if I'm receptive for
it. Yes. Isn't that, that's lovely. Yeah. If I'm receptive. And that's what chapter 34 is about. If I'm receptive. And if you're not receptive, what do you do? What does that? What's the result of that? What's the impact of that? You know, we try and force receptivity.
Repulsion I sort of get to feel I don't like
Real sort of. And that's what chapter 34 is about in a whole lot of different ways. How our state of mind and consciousness can adapt to what these different levels of influx and relationship with the text and with the world of spirit around us are. And learning to be receptive. And then if we don't be made to be receptive, being desolated until we're receptive, you know, because there's a receptivity on both sides that's needed, which is really important. The people that have this one, Mark.
I found using the Dole study notes very helpful in appreciating what Swinburne says about Genesis and Exodus. And even the book you've got there, The Path. So my approach has been indirect, that if I'm drawn to a particular part of the Bible, the book of Genesis and Exodus, then, and if I want to understand more about it, I'll be drawn more to the Arcana. So it hasn't been so much directly, but more indirectly that I go to particular passages.
That'll make sense too, doesn't it?
Yes. Yes. Then you're receptive.
And you're receptive. And what are your people saying is about what makes them receptive and what doesn't make them receptive? I'd like you to just explore that a little bit in little groups of twos or threes, just for about a couple of minutes. Just chat with your neighbours around the two things. What, not just in you, you might say to yourself, I want to get receptive, but it's not just up to us, it's got to be a relationship, and it's got to be with the people around us, it's got to be with the state we're in, it's got to be with how life is for us at the moment, you know? What are the things that helps you be more receptive? with the Arcana, and with any of Swedenborg's writings, and with the work, what are the things that helped you be receptive, both in yourself and around you? And what are the things that takes receptivity away? You know? So it's almost like we're talking about our Wi-Fi reception. You know? If I go away from the window, it cuts out. And if I move towards it, it comes in. Oh, right, you're back again. The same process is at work here in a different way. So just have a little 2 to 3, 4 minute talk with your neighbors. What works. If you start with this group, anyone want to say what it was for you as a group? Report back to the group.
We're not always ready at a certain age to get involved when it's not the time for us.
So our age and stage of development
different things
may not make us receptive? What did you feel make you receptive? Did you go to that one?
Maturity.
There we go. So as you get older, you become more receptive.
One person in our group talked about reflecting on the Lord leading us by the hand where we were. Mm-hmm. And I think it was important. Something that comes with that maturity is a realization that we are being led from where we are, and we don't have to judge ourselves on where we should be.
Lovely. Isn't that beautiful? Yes. We're becoming like children again, letting ourselves be led. Mm-hmm. Isn't that lovely? You know? Mm-hmm. Lovely. Isn't that lovely? How about for you guys? Mm-hmm. You had quite an animated discussion.
There were a few points. I think what blocks, interesting things there, things like having something else to attend to that you know you should attend to, so something on conscience blocking your ability to actually get into the text until that's been sorted out. Siobhan had an interesting aspect in terms of difficulty getting into the text. She said when she has had a meal, difficult after to get into the text.
Well, that's a brilliant example. You know, our physiology does affect that. You know? Like Blaine saying, read at night time, and it's hard not to start going to sleep. It's night time. You know? You had a heavy meal, no blood sugar. It's all connected. Yeah.
So she recommends Irish bread and warm milk.
Which Swedenborg actually, when you read about him, he got by pretty much on coffee, tea, and bread,
milk,
and really hot stuff.
Don't forget the snuff.
Yeah.
Always got to bring in the
addition. That's what preserved the manuscripts, isn't it? The hardly spilled on.
And then getting into it, really having a purpose, point of focus, and use.
Yeah.
Having some kind of reason outside oneself to get into it.
Having to do a submission.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm building stress.
I'm going to ask David a particular question, and I'll ask each of the ministers this, so the rest of you will be able to get prepared. What happens though when you got to do it because you got to present it? What's that like? Well, look at the look in his face.
It's a challenge.
It is.
Yeah, that's a real challenge. When I was a student training, we were given, we'd come to seminars and Ian would have assigned a chapter of the Arcana to each of us to actually bring. And it used to take from the end of one seminar to 4 months later. So through that 4 months of trying to get your head around the material, and then of course we come with our out on the edge weird kind of ideas, and then we've got to present it. So that was one kind of experience. Now what it's more for me now is I read, I kind of stick with the biblical material and really make sure I've got a a sense of that, and then really look for the process aspects, what relates to our inner process that's there, and try and connect in with that. So, yeah.
Ladies, would you think that's the sense of maturity in here? Do you know? In terms of being more receptive. Yeah? Do you know what I mean? Yeah. If you had to do it as a minister,
it's
fairly
sure. Spiritually fairly young.
No, but I mean that. I mean that in the way that you guys meant it. That you're more at a space where you're not pushing. Yeah, which is a theme I like to follow, being receptive by not pushing. But sometimes if you're in different situations, you might feel you have to, particularly if you're presenting. There's a sense of, and particularly even more so when you're a student, I better work this out, you know, because I've been given to present it. It's a learning process. And that in itself then gives us a process as ministers of how we learn to become receptive and not let our egos get in the way. Do you know? It must be possible. Or in fact, use our ego as a switchboard into going to what we need to go to. You know? Yeah, David and I coming down the stairs this morning because we train together and we're very close together. We're able to go because you've got to do the preparation stuff for presenting. I'm able to go, David, okay, so how, what did Ian do yesterday? Well, he did that. What are you doing with this? Well, I'll do this. And so we help ourselves. There's a support in when you've got to do something, and it's not your own, not only your own doing that you're reading it for. You're reading it for other people. There's a support ministers give each other in that I really appreciate because it's helping you get something ready for other people. You know, which is a different process than you doing it for yourself. Do you know? So that's interesting too. Thank you for saying that. That's lovely. What did your group come up with over here? Was it four?
Three.
And then you went that one.
What did you guys come up with about receptivity?
No.
Oh, I'm not sure about it. It was rather an interesting discussion from my perspective because I'm at the very beginning of that journey. And I'm hearing from Patrick about the his experiences with reading the Arcana and coming to grips with it and the different difficulties that he's had. Mm-hmm. And I'm hearing from Lenore about the support programs or support groups that she's a part of and how valuable that is from her perspective. So it was all.
Especially the Bible readings that we have given that come from Bernice and through Ian, which is set out for every day of the year.
Mm-hmm. I know that one.
The Bible and lovely. The Arcana or any other books of Swedenborg. They're not long. We usually read them at breakfast while we're having breakfast.
Yes.
And get quite look forward to the next day.
That's, I know.
And it makes you receptive.
I love that. Yeah. And it's not hard work.
Yeah.
It's not like the work we might have to do in preparing a sermon or preparing here's a presentation about it. It's a pleasure.
Yeah.
It's lovely. Yes. I hear that. Not force.
And we can do it together.
You can do it together, which is lovely.
I think it's interesting though because we have on the one hand getting involved in Skype meetings and using the technology side of things. And on the other hand we have meetings in houses and sharing face-to-face, the readings and so on. How it's almost a social interaction from that perspective.
And they both get somewhere too, which is interesting. They both have a result. Yes.
I was just going to say, it's a whole different proposition to read a chapter or a section that you have to go through to cover to summarise or to present, as opposed to going there to draw something out from a logo praxis point of view or, you know, or go to the word, the Bible. It's where you go and then you get what you need and you close it again. It becomes like a reference. So you dip in, you take what you need or you know, and then you put it down as opposed to going through a section and then mentally sort of, you know, try and work out. It's a different, totally different way.
It is.
Totally different need, totally different mindset, totally different outcome.
It is. And each of those can have positive and negative impacts on it too, in terms of, I'll talk about that in a moment. But the struggling part is useful as well.
Mm.
You know? As well as the beauty of the gentle gift part. They're all got their uses. You know, they're all there because they're useful in some form. And it's a bit like the way Jay and I teach psychotherapy. She has every single step almost, every single session and exercise of our 4-year training program written in a large set of notes that would be that thick if we printed it. I do not teach that way. I jump up and go with what's figurable. And the difference is, though, sometimes I say, can I read your notes? I'm sure I'm forgetting something, and I usually am, you know. And she likes the way I do what I do, but when we teach together, there's a harmony between both those ways. And I appreciate her way, and she appreciates mine, and we learn from each other, you know. That's fun.
Can I say a word?
Yes, please.
Just speaking from the feminine point of view, which has been on my mind and kind of processing in me during these last 2 days, because I've been working with a lot of very intelligent, interesting men around the room.
Yes.
And something that Ian said in his presentation, which I talked about this morning, was when you meet somebody who's in terrible distress and you feel the compassion coming through your heart, well, that's the celestial level working through you. So for me, that was very, very informative, because I work as a healer and I work as a presenter in classes and workshops. And presenting the Swedenborg teachings in a way that comes through love rather than intellect or the masculine side, it's very different.
Mm-hmm.
And I work with a lot of ladies who work as therapists. And it's very much... it's hard to explain because it's a very interior process.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like you feel for the person. The first stage is what Ian said. You feel for the person in front of you. And I work with people in a lot of distress, which I think is a wonderful space to be in from the movement point of view.
Mm-hmm.
So they might be very broken down in front of me and crying. And I'll say something to them like, well, what do you wish? What do you wish for? And they'll say, I just wish that I could. And it'll be, you know, handle this or be in peace or, you know, have a clear mind. And then through that compassion, I get something from the readings come through to say to them that they actually interpret back to me. I'm always worrying a bit about, am I interpreting this properly? Because when you do it in the readings from the book, it's hard to digest. And I've been speaking to Ian and David about getting the new translations. But they often, when I say something to them, they'll translate it back to me, and it's just perfectly, you know, clear, which is a wonderful expression of the energies, the celestial energy, particularly that love energy working through and clarifying.
Exactly right. And Swedenborg really does spend a lot of time around that, about atmospheres, as he calls
yes,
it, because he's had to use words of his time. He didn't have broadband and all those sort of metaphors to use. But he's saying atmospheres and spheres and things are as receptive as where we're at. So that if our Lord's like the sun shining on us and we have got sun cream on and we get burnt, you know, what is that? It's not... It's, and as you see a lot of it in the early New, Old Testament stuff, where the relationship with God is one where it's more of a struggle. And because if we look at that, it's because it's the state of where the people are at too. It can't help be a struggle. And he even talks about with people that are in the less congenial parts of the world of spirit that he would call hell. Their state of being, it hurts them to get love. And I know people in this life where it's like that. They winch when you give love because it breaks open the pain inside.
Mm.
And so you have to walk gently, touch gently, a bit like the Horse Whisperer movie. Robert Redford, you touch people gently when they've been hurt and traumatized, which is exactly what you're saying. So for us, if we're hurt and traumatized and we go to the love
as well as the wisdom and energy and intelligence and understanding that can come from this, that can be painful. Sometimes it needs to be because of where we are. But sometimes it's us learning to adapt to how much can we take, how much is too much, and what are we trying to do and where is that coming from? Are we trying to push something?
I didn't intend it to go this far,
but we've still got all the time to do the other stuff. That's just fine. What did you guys come up with?
Things which make it easier to be receptive, Darren said something quite nicely. He said, the willingness to be led. And that summarises situations where you may be in a really good mood, everything's going right, and you just want to build on that, so that's a good one, but then you may be down and looking for a solution to something or some additional help. In both of those, either the positive mental space or negative one, the willingness to be led is there in both cases.
Yes, and we're hearing that as a mature process.
Yes.
And we're hearing that as a shifting process, a developmental process, and it's also a relational process. To be led not only by ourselves in it, but the people we're maybe offering help to be led by what they, how they receive it. Lovely. Thank you, folks. I didn't intend to do this, but I trust in flux, and that's okay. And I've got what I need to say still there, so that's okay. What did you guys come up with? About receptive.
We said making a special time helps a lot. You've got to have a calm mind, and so sometimes you have to deal with issues that are on your mind first, or you can pray for guidance, but even that doesn't seem to help sometimes. You're just not in the right space. We also said that you actually have to be quite patient with the arcana, because it can be very frustrating that it all just seems to be good truth, will, understanding, and it's all the words, and it's trying to get some meaning out of it because it just seems so repetitive. And sometimes, you know, we can't be reading sacred texts all the time. We have to be going out and doing it as well.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, sometimes we're not in the space for doing it.
Yeah.
But we think that compelling yourself to have some discipline and do it is good.
It's good. So balance between, you know, set yourself in the right space, maybe do a little bit of forcing, like making yourself exercise, is good. But if you do it too much, it's not good.
Yeah. And we're saying that sometimes reading Swedenborg is hard, but it doesn't always, it's not, you can't immediately get into it as well. I think the Bible's more immediate. If you're in a bad space, it's easy just to go straight to the Word and read something from there. It seems to have a more immediate
impact.
So perhaps we should always read, I know it's a good word, but perhaps we should just read some easier passages, you know, from the Psalms or something to get in the right mood first.
It's lovely. Lovely to hear all this. Thanks, Ruth.
Yes. I was saying that, talking about having children, it's a bit hard, so you have to find time with no distractions, be alone, read, then reread it, and Ian was suggesting just take some sentences to meditate on. Don't, you know, try and do too much at big chunks, just take some quotes and have those out on a piece of paper or something separate or highlighted, and don't feel the obligation, don't push yourself, and so no pressure, and being patient for the meaning to come through.
Lovely. Yes, mate.
One thing is, I think we need to just revisit what we mean, and what we convey to others is an expectation that they will read the writings. But what do we mean by that? I think we've got to be very careful what we mean by that. Of course people should be familiar with the writings, but we're not just a bookish church. We are a living church. And that's very important, that we don't convey that one of the criteria of being a new churchman is that they forever have their noses stuck in the volume of Arcana Celestia. That is not what makes for genuine new churchmanship in the descent of the Holy City. That's why I said to Sally, for a busy mother, just have a few pages of quotes or something like that, which you can take to school with you, one of which you can take to school with you. That's reading the Arcana, and that's using the Arcana. You don't have to feel you've finished volume 5 before you go to school this morning, or by the end of the year. The other thing I wanted to say is that when it comes to the Arcana or books like that, again, don't put yourself under a sense of obligation that I've got to plow through this and make sense of it. I think it's extreme. I learnt it when I was in college. You know, when they first started us preparing sermons, it was the day before computers, of course, but I'd surround myself on my desk with book after book after book after book after book, and I would be trying to make sense. I remember trying to do a sermon for Palm Sunday as a student, and I was just absolutely lost in the forest. That taught me over time that I've got to back off the books, and I've got to just see what is the leading thought. So unless you've got the leading thought of a chapter of the Arcana, forget it. Don't try to read it. Get hold of what this chapter is about in one or two sentences. Like you've already told us, I switched from what you said a minute ago into the chapter, and I thought, yes, I know what he's talking about now. I heard one word, chapter being about the remaking of the tablets for the commandments, and I thought, yes, that's what that chapter is about. He told me. And I could go off and, you know, sit outside with a cup of coffee, because I know now from one word you've said that's opened up that chapter. And that's what I plead for when you come to the books of the writing. If you need help, you know, ask. We're here to help each other. Just get me on the right road here. What should I be looking for in this chapter?
Yeah, it's a bit like what you were saying too about reading other people, and they help clarify. And I love that. Tell it to me. What's their understanding? Does that support us to get to it? Because they're done thinking about it.
Can I just say to Sally that, you know, when you have young children, you are working full out. It's almost impossible to do in a spiritual study, I think. It's just, I never could. You're just so preoccupied with what you're doing with your family. I don't think God expects you to be there studying at the same time.
Yes.
One of the things I read in that reading from True Christianity this morning is there is an infinity in the words, least details. And some local mobile phone company is talking about infinite numbers of minutes and what that means. And they're just thinking about, you know, you can read any sentence, any phrase, any concept there in the writings, and it can open up infinitely. So we don't need to plow on.
You don't mention that. Sal, do you want to throw anything back to us as well from whatever that experience is?
It's
comforting.
I don't know what I'm doing. I'm not doing all this.
Yeah.
Of course, I've done another book. I read book after book each week. I can't even read one because I've got my 5-year-old on me.
Yeah, I'm going to talk about that in a
second.
Yeah, exactly.
And if I could just add,
I'm so happy.
I work with a lot of young mums who have young children at home, and especially up here on the mountain, because they have their part-time jobs and trying to do everything. And what I've found is a happy compromise is with heaven and hell, which we work on quite a bit, and reading about, you know, how children are brought up in heaven and how the mothers there, the surrogate mothers, do little representations in art and beauty for the children. And that is actually the Arcana in working, in use. So what Sally actually does in her life is much more than reading a book. It's actually the whole living of that, as Ian was saying, moving beyond the book and having it integrated into the life. So every little child that you work with, Sally, is actually being imbued with these wonderful things. It's not about reading.
Yeah, it's and validation is a release, a feeling from us. And a crying of the validation is to feel that and the letting of it go.
That's what I'm saying.
Which is lovely. Van Dusen talks about he starts crying from joy.
Yeah.
He's a crying mystic. He can't give talks. Well, he's dead now. Well, no, he's in the world. Sorry, Will. Anyway, so
you can't feel bad that you're not reading the Bible.
Oh, look, I know. I'm going to go there. That's guilt. What this is about, too.
Yeah, because you can carry guilt.
Yes, very much so. And, you know, that's why he can't give talks, because he starts crying. Yes. I must be harder than that. I start laughing. But that's okay. We all need to, at times, I'm crying. We need to laugh and cry at the whole range of this. This is a feelingful process. And as Ian said, we're not just a church of people who read books. We're a church of people who live it in all the different parts of our life that we're working in all the different forms that it radiates into us and we adapt it. And that's why I love this church, why I became a minister. It holds all the other churches for me. I'm glad I decided to ask people. Well, I didn't decide that, you know. I feel like I did. So. Sorry, we have one more thing. Yeah, I'm coming here in. We have one more. Look, it was between you and Ruth telling me what to do. I've got to go with Ruth. I'm sorry.
I think I'll read something. It may be I can't or something sacred, but I don't tend to read Swedenborg's actual writing because I find them so complicated. But you read other things and I just read and I read and oh, that makes sense, no, that doesn't make sense, da 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 da. And what I find is it's a repository in my brain.
Yes.
And I'll come to a situation and someone who's searching for something or questioning something or asking me something or contradicting something, and I just say, please send me the words. And it's absolutely staggering at what comes out.
What comes in.
And I have to keep reminding myself, it's not me that's talking, and I have to have faith that the words will come. And they do. So I say, I can read something and it can mean very little.
Yes.
But it's there for when the Lord wants it.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's been the challenge for Swedenborg as a process to bring this to earth. Do you know? The buddy could have just downloaded it all. Mm-hmm. Onto a large hard drive. You could have said, but he didn't. He had to actually write all this stuff that would suit people at all different levels of states, from when they wanted every word explained, to when they wanted it encapsulated, you know, through to when they wanted the stories of his real experiences, because they meant more to people, you know. And the complexity of that, too, as he was doing it, while he was also doing his spiritual diary and spiritual experiences. And so he's sort of dropping those in and seeing how they connected and how they changed his understanding as he moved forward. And there are times he knew it was being automatically given to him. And he learned even in the Journal of Dreams long before that it was an influx for him as well. So that's what I think is so touching. It's like once he went through all his own personal stuff in a lot of ways and then entered into the world of spirit, he went to work. His job.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's like getting ready for the job was the spiritual diary stuff. But once he got in, he went to work.
Yeah.
By hand. It's hard to believe that nowadays. Mm-hmm. It's all on the internet. Do you know? And in Latin.
Yeah.
Do you know? I mean, anyway. So, and yet here he is today being read by us and even talked about by us and bringing up all his lovely experiences in our lives. So, thank the Lord. You know?
When I was searching in this witness and faith, no man would talk to me for hours. And I thought, yes, I really enjoy talking about the Bible and talking about all these things, but they aren't exact done.
Yes.
And I realised, I prayed, what God wanted me to do, I felt him saying, you just look after those kids, bring up those poor children.
Yep.
That's your main purpose.
Yeah.
So you don't worry, you've got to do that, that's your purpose in life at the moment.
Another thing doesn't apply to women. One of the lovely mystics that I love was Brother Lawrence, who was the cook in a monastery.
Mm.
And he was cooking for all the monks while they were off meditating. And he read his little book. And he decided, I'm not getting time to do all they're doing.
just like Sally. I'm busy cooking for all these people who feel inspired. So he desired, he talked to God, he said, what are you going to do? I need help here, come on, help me out. And the influx that came through was, I'm going to talk to you then.
Yeah, I get it.
While I'm cooking. And he described this now as his own meditative practice was the practice of the presence of God. He brought God along with him.
Yeah.
While he's cooking. And how much nicer might that be after a while than sitting trying to study something and to force our own intelligence into that? Or understanding into it, you know?
There's one more little thing. In our reading this session, there's a lovely little bit where it says, if you just believe the truth that you hear, you don't need to study it.
Okay.
If you believe it, it's as good. You're there in heaven anyway.
Well,
so
look,
you don't need to understand all the ins and outs.
That's right, if you notch it up to a celestial level, and you look at how celestial angels meet people and understand things and all the rest, it's far faster than a written word style of things. It's the whole thing, the whole quantum reality thing is happening. And Swedenborg experienced that. Suddenly, wow, there's something in the sky. And he asked the angel, well, does that mean the angel knows it's in the sky? Because previously in most ancient church, they're living in a space where this may sense because of the inner-outer connection, which we lost. Which we lost through our propriums and our attraction to all this and our connection to all this. And then basically, and this is what the chapter's about, I don't have my little readings ready for you, but look, it's not up to me. It's what the influx is. This is what that chapter's all about too, is the fallen sensuous. It talks of. And, you know, if we read Charles, he actually does a lovely little job of saying what it means for our Lord's development, and we can then also read what that means for us. If we read what Swedenborg says, it gives a whole stack of layers of meaning, and the connections he does, sentence by sentence, and then starting to pull it all together, is gigantic. It's gigantic. It's amazing. Because he cross-references. He hasn't got a computer. He cross-references stuff. From the Old and the New Testament, and from himself, and he just goes bang, 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 bang. That's not influx. It's fine, we never got computers, you know. So if you try and move into that, look. But you guys, before I say any further, I need to stop. What was your guys' experience? What did you perceive and not perceive?
Yeah, well, the colors that I read down is supporting each other in the receptivity. There are a lot of distractions out there. We do have to go to work. We do have children. We have wives and husbands and all the rest of it. So they are, but we both love reading the writings. And we're finding that our receptivity of reading the writings does change from time to day to day. It goes up and down like that. But it's growing. We found that it's growing. And if we just persevere and just read a little bit each day, it's growing.
Lovely. That's it, trust. Which I've heard a number of people mention their trust, that if they go to the writings, they go to the word, they'll get what they need. That's lovely as well. So,
I would just add,
go on, mate.
Just one thing. Everything that could possibly be said and more has been said, but when I read the Arcana, I find that references, how do you deal with all these references? What works best for me is, while I believe I'm understanding it, I can disregard the references to going to previous books and so on. But if I don't understand something and I want to understand it, then I do follow the references. But most of the time, I read it and I just disregard the references and just get the main line of what it's saying.
Yes, that's how I read quantum physics, without reading their equations. I go to the narrative. The equations are gone. I'm not going to try that. That's, why not? That's what they're saying. When I
long before, maybe 20 years before I went and trained with Ian and David and we all went through our process, I was going through a spiritual type awakening process where around... it was just flowing in, and I would read three or four different types of spiritual books from Hinduism and the I Ching and all the rest, and it was like overwhelming all that. Luckily, I also started to experience that I didn't exist. So I got to a state where I remember one day I fell asleep and woke up and I realized I'd disappeared. I let that sit with me as a meditation too. And because of the way I teach and do therapy, you know from that, like, it's not yours. You're the one. Like, as Martin Buber said, it won't happen by me, but it won't happen without me. So there's that really divine providence thing of the more I become the Lord's, the more I become my true self. And so that's what I more and more trust in with this, in both the learning and the reading, when I'm being a good boy. The bad side of me knows that I'm extraordinarily clever, got a very high IQ. I can read and understand stuff in a flash, just like the way the guy out of, what was Russell Crowe? No. Oh, thanks very much. Hey, man. Clovis. That is good too. He was an autistic savant. I like that. See, they love that. Look. No. I was going to think of the guy who became psychotic out the numbers guy. Oh, yeah. Who got the Nobel Prize.
Beautiful Mind.
What was the guy's name?
Russell Crowe.
And then the guy he played. He'd look at all these numbers and he'd actually make patterns out of them and see them, you know? And when you can do that with reading things.
But he couldn't relate to other people.
Yeah, he had a schizophrenia paranoid type that happens later on in life. And so he got through that with his wife. His wife got him through, even in what you read in real life compared to the movie. So that's like a support net if we go at this in a really clever way. Us also knowing it's not ours, and that's the big challenge, you know? But my sins is part of my regenerative process, I guess, was when I got these, I still remember Julian brought these to our house in New Dapto Road where our children were babies still. That's how long ago it was, in a box. And so having read all my other spiritual literatures, finally starting to think maybe I did understand things, I got these and I made myself read them in a way my brain can read stuff, where I felt like I was downloading this at a rate of knots intellectually, and it was making sense, even all the little hard bits. And I did that for I don't remember how long, maybe a year. I remember now I got to this space where I got to about book 9 or 10, and I just couldn't get further. You know, it's like total spiritual gluttony and willfulness to my ego wanting to get all this inside, and I just had to stop. My brain wouldn't work anymore. This is what you were saying, what you're struggling with. And it was a good lesson. It was a really good lesson. Because I also thought, what am I doing with that? I'm not doing anything. I'm sure it's doing something within me and how I talk. But it's a good lesson to stop. And it's part of that thing where if you're going to learn to be this way, you've often got to go to the other part first and really experience the polarity to be able to go in the middle and have fine freedom between the two places. So when we did come to do this with Ian, I didn't mind the discipline of us preparing it, because by that time, both in my therapy and what I was teaching in therapy and what we were doing, I trusted I'll be given what I needed when I go to any of these texts. And sometimes I go over, particularly if I've got to prepare it, into I'm going to work at it or make it happen or create it. And as I start to do that, I hold my little tensions and anxieties and go, yes, I know, okay. So let's just see what we're given. And as it's given to me, I go, okay, thank you. And I do thank my friends that I've never met. This guy's lucky to have met him. I've never met Jeffrey Childs. But his Golden Thread book, and in particular this one, is one of the books I have beside my bed that I have a great love for, because of, not only does this tell me about the Arcana in a more simple, innocent way, and about what's happening for our Lord, first and foremost, more than all the other material, I still need this too, because this will give me sometimes where I need a lot of really good understanding about it too. Do you know? And really, that's what the chapter was about that I find fascinating. When we read it directly from the Bible, it's about these most ancient church people coming into the descendants of Jacobs, who are very much in their external sensual realms and doing external sensual religions like circumcision. And they, one of the princes falls in love with the one of the daughters and rapes her. You know, he forces himself. And then the sons say to him, yeah, look, well, if you want to, I want to marry her because I now love her. And they say, well, then you have to get circumcised, all of you, and you can join us. And when they do, they kill them.
All in a week.
What's that?
All in a week and stay.
All in a week and stay. And when you step that up to what that means, both in the Arcana and then in the Path, and if we bring it into some of what I was talking about last night and what we've talked about today, it's about that process of forcing. And that's one of the key messages in this. Forcing. And as Charles says for our Lord, there came a time for him when everything had opened internally, with even to the level of the natural, that when he saw what lay in the sensuous. And the hardest thing for me that lays in the sensuous, what I talked about last night, that Swedenborg had to undo, was this so strong creates our sense of separateness. You know, the sensuous is where we find the most separateness of all. Not just in the pleasures of all the sensual things, but in our actual experience of self. This is where we feel most separate. And Swedenborg undid that. Well, you know what I mean, experience that being undone. Till eventually in the world of spirit, there's a whole new identity happening. Till eventually when it comes to conjugal love, there's a very different space of being. And the other mystical religions talk about this. The Sufis talk about it. They call the proprium the naps. That all these little earthly naps, these all little parts of our identity, just want to eat things like little sneakles and have a good time here. The people that laugh are the people that are doing it for us. But we all have that. We can all feel that time when we become very sensual in who we are or our reality. And the way I think of it is, people go, look, that's my water, please. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Is that your water or my water?
No, I haven't found it out.
That's right. But it's that ownership thing, really. The sensual creates ownership. It doesn't just create all these wicked Catholic pleasures that you're not meant to do. You know? It creates ownership.
I'm going to interject at that point in time. It's exactly what we do when we read. Is you take ownership.
Exactly right, mate.
And I just want to iterate, and this, you know, Sally's over there, I can't really sort of give a hug, but it's... The issue that I've, up until I came to this church, what kept me going is the golden rule. The golden rule, everything hangs on that. Everything is in that. And what Glenn also said as well, you've got one word in here.
That's right.
And it contains the divine, infinitely. And so, whereas we might, you know, might read a lot, and, you know, I'm gifted in being able to read quite easily. And it doesn't make me a better person. You know, you might have 20 books stored in your memory. It doesn't make you a better person at all. And in fact, you know, one of the lovely passages in the writings is that the people that are most innocent are the most gifted with wisdom in the next world. And it's got nothing to do with the knowledge that we stored up in our memory here.
Exactly.
I just want to say that.
How we apply it. Bruce Lee writes about this in his book on his philosophy, that love and wisdom not put into action are lost or wasted. Says the same thing in Swedenborg. It really fascinated me. Are often different places that truths persist and come through, because our Lord is reaching to everybody all the time in whatever form that people are open to receiving that. And then, oh. Thank you. I don't know if that's an affirmation or a diffaffirmation, but it's there. It made a punctuation mark. I mean, think of all the things that you shared around that. The theme, in terms of that, was there's no good if you've got an internal space that you're getting to in this work, like Swedenborg got to, if you come back and try and force that into the natural, or as you say, take ownership of what you're reading. And the antidote against that, in part, like with all spiritual texts, is they're very hard, often. They don't make a lot of sense, because they're meant to be hard work in place until you're ready to get them. Teresa of Avila said that sometimes as she starts to say the Lord's Prayer, she just needs to say, Our Father, and she bursts into tears. Because of the meaning of that. And I remember one session David did on the very beginning word, the very beginning sentence and words in the Bible, and what the Hebrew letters were and what they meant and how you could unpack them. You know, it's really like if we had an internet screen with it and you clicked on it and clicked on it and clicked, and that's what Swedenborg does. When he gets a Bible passage, he clicks on what Dinah means. He clicks on what one word means and he shows all the connections out there. Like he's got a gigantic internet screen where he goes click, 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 and brings us back into all this knowledge if we want to. And then you can pull back to the actual singular sentence again and feel what that means. For me, in terms of what I presented last night, it's exactly what you guys are all telling us and teaching us together around if we do allow ourselves bit by bit in a maturing process, work at this in a way that suits us, with and without the different struggles, and trust in we'll get what we need as we need it. And if we are forcing it, that's our learning at that time, but it learns us not to do it. And it's learning us about, we still though, the other thing I've learned in this, the other trick in that, to keep the polarity going, is it doesn't mean we then just go, okay, every time we read it's going to be what we need, we're going to be fixed. That's an awful temptation. Because the balance in it, as Swedenborg talks about too, is you've got to keep doing it like it's you doing it, even though you know it's from the Lord. Or as the old sailor's prayer is in a shipwreck, pray to God while you swim to the shore. So we've got to do the work too. And my working this to present it to you is part of the work. One of the things I've been struggling about in last month is memory. And seeing I missed a bit about how I thought memory worked. I didn't like that at first. And because who wants to give up memory, even in open study, but you can't really access it unless it's the right thing. What a challenge that was for me, because I like having memories. What I realized though, it's a bit like once you get into the space that Swedenborg got into around even memory and your exterior memory and your internal memory, you come to a space where, like for the angels, you don't need to go back to external memories really, because it's like going from a computer that's not connected to a hard drive that's got all the memories stored on the hard drive to a computer which is connected to the internet, where it's not just what was on that, it's all what's out there, and that's so much richer, you know, and how it's more immediate. And part of the thing of moving for me has been a teaching around, I've always loved Wollongong, and being in Wollongong sensually comforted me, because as a child I spent a lot of time in hospitals, so the physical sensual reality was my comfort, but I didn't have my parents around me and all that. And leaving a sensual reality that comforts me is a real challenge, as my wife well knows. We would move house, she'd have to let me sleep the last night in the house with no furniture in it so she could let me get accustomed to move into the next state. I think whichever angels are trying to help me sometimes are getting frustrated. Come on, Brian. Time to move to the next house. I don't want to go. No, come on, just go get me. Come on, step up and do it. And coming up here has been a feeling of that is okay. In the physical sense of moving. In the spiritual sense of moving. From, as Swedenborg experienced, letting our egos go. And going from the external sensuous reality into this more ancient church internal reality and memory. it is a difficult walk. And what we see in, and this again is a minor cane to be driving down, what we see in chapter 34 of Genesis is the remnant of the most ancient church is actually, if they go and move and join with the religion of this new exterior church, going backwards. Do you know? It's like Swedenborg giving up, saying, I'm not going to have these spiritual experiences internally. You know? And that's a challenge for us as we move back and forward between our interior states when we read this, and then we move out into exterior states. How we manage those. How we hold the interior as we're out doing dishes and we're out feeling pain and we're doing the other stuff. For me, that happens with a willful surrender to knowing that we're being looked after. Do you know? And it's really lovely. Now, you can read more about that. I want to finish with one of the parts of the Bible that relates to this, where our Lord is a manager as well as a teacher, preacher and healer, was getting frustrated. And yet, even though the frustration's there, there's a humour in this situation that made me laugh out loud. And so I trust that there must have been something good in that. It's where, and I've hardly done any of the readings I've prepared, believe it, I haven't read anything in heaven. That's the way I did, you know, it just prepares you. But this is a passage from Mark, where he's, lovely, 3 minutes. This is where he's fed the multitude, yes? The 4,000 this time. And then he gets in, he goes into the boat with the disciples. Okay, remember that bit? He's fed all these people out of hardly anything. So it's obviously not a sensual process, is it? Anyway, here's what happens. And immediately he went into the boat with his disciples, and he came to the country of Dalmatia. And the Pharisees came out and began to question him, etc., and asked him for a sign from heaven and test him. He sighed in his spirit and said, why does this generation need a sign? External. Now, truly, I say to you, no sign will be given. And he left them and went into the boat and departed from the port. And they'd forgotten to take bread except one loaf. And there's no more in the boat. And he commanded them and said to them, watch out and beware the leaven of the Pharisees and of the leaven of Herod. And they were reasoning amongst themselves and saying, is this because we've no bread? I just had to laugh. How frustrated must he be? He's trying to speak to them spiritual interior truths. You know? And they're really on the central plane still. What does he mean? What bread? We've got a loaf of bread. I just had a laugh at that. And, like, it's frustrating as well, and that's what we all go through. But I think if I feel the humour in that too, of our sensual side, we can be gentler with it and forgive it a bit. And know we will get sensual. And we will interpret spiritual things in a, where's the bread? And for me, that's okay. It's part of the journey. It's like Van Dusen said, why do you want to get rid of your ego? That's why you stay here. Mm-hmm. Just be gentle with that and yourself. And things will move through. And so I really, really like to finish on that, because to me, I also see the love our Lord has for us and the way he not only gives us parables to help us understand spiritual reality, but at times he explains those parables. And now we have Swedenborg explaining so much more than we can probably ever take in a lifetime. So it's a good thing it lasts for eternity. Thank you, folks, because we've almost like done the lecture together, and I like that. And I like to hear what I've heard from all of you. So thank you very much.